Today's gospel reading takes us to the upper room to hear some of the words Jesus spoke to his disciples in his farewell address before his arrest. After washing the feet of the 12 and sharing bread and wine with them, Jesus tells them, "I give you a new commandment. You must love one another just as I have loved you." But in what sense is this commandment new? We already know that in the Old Testament, God has commanded his people to love their neighbors as themselves. Jesus himself, when asked about the greatest commandment, replied the first is to love God with all your heart, soul, and mind, and the second is to love your neighbor as yourself. So what is the novelty of this commandment Jesus entrusts to his disciples? Why call it new? The novelty lies in the love of Jesus Christ, the love with which he gave up his life for us. Any love any one of us may find welling up in us flows from God's universal love, which is without conditions and without limits, and which finds its fullest expression on the cross. Quite possibly, no word can be so abased and gutted of content than love. Yet no word has such dynamic potential within it to change everything about everything. Jesus understood this. He also understood that the word love, absent the actions of love, is abased and gutted. But the word love, giving expression to the self-giving, reconciling, vulnerability-making life of God, is the power of life and new life. But it will cost everything. Consider the moment when Jesus says to his disciples, "Take notes. I have a new commandment of love to give you." This is the upper room on the night when he is betrayed. 24 feet still tingle from the touch of his hands as he washed them and dried them. 22 ears still ring from the thud of the door as Judas left the room. And now 11 minds, along with everyone else who has heard this story, race to make sense of this new paradigm for discipleship Jesus has just announced. Until now, everyone knew they were Jesus' disciples because they followed Jesus' footsteps, as disciples follow their teacher. The disciple was known by proximity to his teacher, walking a few steps behind, learning and then embodying his teacher's teaching and way of life. "You shall know you are my disciples by doing what I tell you and show you." That's the paradigm of discipleship. That's the pedagogy. But did we just hear right? Jesus has changed the formula. Now everyone shall know you're my disciples by your proximity to one another, walking with one another through life and showing compassion, embracing and joy, offering forgiveness, washing one another's feet, dying to self. Only later, thinking back to the passion of Christ's agony, the disciples understood the meaning of those words, "As I have loved you, you too must love one another." Love to which the church is called to live as manifested in the cross of Christ is the only force that transforms our hearts of stone into hearts of flesh. The only force capable of transforming our heart is the love of Jesus, if we too love with this love. Someone told me recently about an experience he'd had when he was asked to help preside over the ordination of a fellow minister. He took his place in the front of the church and stood as witness to the proceedings. He wasn't involved in them directly. He wasn't the one being ordained. He said he watched his colleague kneel and receive the blessings that made him a pastor. And then, quite unexpectedly, in a mystical sense, he said, "Love for this colleague washed over him." He told me, "In a moment, I had this deep, complete sense of love for him, like it came from outside me and overcame me. It wasn't from me. I don't really love him all that much. some days I don't really like him all that much. But something changed on that day inside of me toward him. I felt God's love for him, and for at least a moment, I shared it. John's gospel and John's letters in the New Testament are committed to communicate this to us. God so loved the world, he gave his only son. We love because God first loved us. We must love one another just as he loved us. God is the wellspring of love. By opening ourselves to God's love, we become vessels of a love that's beyond us, but which can touch us. I think this is important to say again and remember, Christian love is a love that goes before us and goes beyond us. We step into the flow and let it carry us on. And that's a beautiful thing. And it's risky too, because stepping into the flow of God's love is stepping into a divine flow that doesn't stop with you. It flows in and through you and likely will take your steps to places you cannot go and would not go otherwise. I think of the Swiss man Roger Schütz, who was born about 100 years ago. Roger was described by his friends in one word: innocent. Roger was an innocent. He wasn't naive or foolish or childlike, except in the biblical sense. Roger was simple. He saw the gospel and the world simply in love, which he understood better than almost anyone else, takes the shape most often as reconciliation. Reconciliation was at the heart of his love, and it took him and then many others to places few would go unless they were compelled by something bigger than themselves, unless they could see the world through God's eyes and love as Christ loved us. In the terrible days of World War II in eastern France, Roger and his sister Genevieve visited German prisoners of war held in France. He would pray with them, bring them some bits of food and drink, and would care for them. Not everyone around them supported this, as you would expect. Feelings of resentment were strong in France for what Germany and German soldiers had done to their people and their land. Resentment, not reconciliation. Enemies, not friendship. One day, a group of women whose husbands had been shipped to German concentration camps got hold of one of the prisoners and beat him to death. Roger sympathized with their terrible pain. There was no way around it. But he also understood something else. That man, that young German soldier, was just as much a victim of war as all the millions of others. Roger and Genevieve were helpless to stop the war, but they did what they could. They hid refugees, Jewish and Christian, in the small home they rented in Taizé, France, for as long as they could. In the years after the war, Roger's innocent, compassionate heart attracted a small group of men to join him in Christian community in Taizé and the rolling hills of the worst of German-French warfare, a community of peace in the cloud of war, a parable of community in the great fractures of human relationship. It wasn't long before the community became all that Roger had envisioned: 12 men, like 12 disciples of Jesus, committed to a simple life of prayer and service to the sick and the poor. But then a few years into the experiment, something started to happen. Young people started showing up at their humble community, not asking for much, just for the opportunity to be around Roger and the brothers. They said, "Teach us to pray. Teach us to love like you do." The little community didn't know quite what to do with this. This is not what they were expecting. This was not the strategic plan. They weren't looking to grow or build their own movement, but how could they not receive with hospitality the young people who came to them? Then more and more started coming, pitching tents all around the small community. And the brothers needed to decide what to do, which meant they were deciding who they are. An ethical question, a missiological question, is an ecclesial question. What do we do? Who are we? Are we an ecumenical, small, monastic community preserving a life of prayer and Gregorian chant for a handful of committed men? Or are we open to these young people and whatever they bring to serve them and through them the world? They deliberated on this for a long time, very seriously. And Roger himself wasn't at all sure what to do. And then they decided, we will change. God is calling us to change. And this changed everything. They replaced Gregorian chant with their own simple choruses from Scripture sung meditatively in prayer. Their prayers became simple Scripture, singing silence. They welcomed all the new people with a new church they built in 1962, far larger than they'd ever imagined. They called it the Church of Reconciliation. Young people came and kept coming, and still to this day at Teze, the small, ordinary community, 100,000 young people from all over the world come to pray and be immersed in the spirituality of the brothers. Pope John Paul said, coming to Teze is like coming by the living spring of water. He called Teze the springtime of the church. About 10 years ago, two brothers from Teze visited Waco and held prayer services here at Dayspring each night. They loved being in Texas because at Teze, they usually eat lentils and rice and steamed vegetables. But here, they could get a hamburger. Brother Emmanuel, that man loved a hamburger. When Brother Emmanuel walked up to Dayspring with us for the first time, he stopped in his tracks in the parking lot, looked up to the sanctuary, looked around the grounds, and he just stood there, and I waited for him. And then he said, "This has the spirit of Teze. I feel it here." Teze is an inspiration for the church around the world, a parable of community, as Roger called it, which means it's a place of risk. Risking serving enemies in the trauma of war, risking openness to outsiders in the uncertainty of community life, relentlessly loving the outcasts, the cast-offs, the outsiders, the too young to be wise, the too old to be useful, the broken down and brokenhearted and confused and angry. And doing so from an innocent belief that God's Spirit is in everyone. This is risky. Love is very risky. And then it was even more, even riskier than anyone could have imagined. During a prayer service in 2005, a mentally ill woman from Romania came up behind Roger while he was praying, pulled a knife, and stabbed him in the back. He died from his wounds. A year after his death, Brother Francois wrote a reflection on his death and noted that his death had been compared to that of Martin Luther King's or Oscar Romero's or Gandhi's. But Francois said, "One cannot deny the difference. Those men were engaged in political and ideological struggle and were assassinated by opponents who could not stand their viewpoint and their influence. Roger's death was without reason." Francois continued, "The most precious thing Brother Roger left us is perhaps found in the sense of love and forgiveness. These two realities that were self-evident for him and that he grasped with a directness that often escapes us. In that area, he was truly innocent, always simple, unguarded, reading the hearts of other people, capable of deep trust. The extremely beautiful look in his eyes was an expression of that. If he felt so much at home with children, that is because they too live in such a direct way. They cannot protect themselves, and they cannot believe what is complicated. Their heart goes straight to what touches them. Maybe because I have not been a child for many years, I find it extremely difficult to know how to love as Jesus loved when I hear this commandment. Maybe children know this directly, but most days I don't know that I know how to begin. But I suppose it looks something like Roger and people like him. They help me have some hope of living in God's love on some days. Love is a willingness to risk and a devotion to reconciliation. Love welcomes strangers, shelters refugees, sees enemies as still human, and is willing to change as God leads. Love is beyond us, before us, and moves through us like a fresh wind. You don't know where the wind comes from or where it's going, but you feel it when it's there. At Roger's death, Rowan Williams, Archbishop of Canterbury, wrote to the Taizé community a sweet and tender letter. He said, "We thank God today for a life that questions our institutional complacency, not in the name of fashion or ease or naive radicalism, but simply in the name of the gospel of Jesus and the ministry of reconciliation." We are given assurance, everyone will know you are Jesus' disciples by your love for one another, because your love helps them remember and helps you remember. There was once a person a long time ago, Jesus, who gave his life for all to know the love and life of God. He was a good man and beloved. His light shone in the world. It shone in the darkness of our fractured and broken world. But his light was too bright, too dazzling, and so it was not easy to bear by those who love darkness rather than the light. The source of light was eliminated, but the light still shines. It still shines in you and through you. So, shine on, brothers. Shine on, sisters. Let your light shine. Let your love grow wider and as deep and as far as Christ's love will take you. What's new about the commandment is not that love is part of the life of God's people. What's new is that love is the beginning and end, the Alpha and the Omega of everything.